So now in the third phase of this discussion, we are analyzing the process of integrative thinking, break it down into constituent elements, okay? Discuss the capabilities and the skills that people must develop to practice integrative thinking. What is it that we all need to do to see that we also are prepared to do such things with these gentlemen did? Exploit the full potential of the opposable mind. How is integrative thinking defined, right? Now, integrative thinking is the ability to face constructively the tension of opposing ideas and instead of choosing one at the expense of the other, generate a creative resolution of the tension in the form of new idea that contains elements of the opposing ideas but is superior to each. We have already explained this. It's a explanation that is given in the form of a definition, right? Integrative thinking is not the only one thing that guarantees business success. Let me add this, very important. It's not the only thing, but this gives you a major leverage. People who are into integrative thinking and action tend to have more choices, more options, more variety of action steps to be taken. So that the loss of time, loss of resources is minimized. There are various approaches. One of the most powerful approaches which has really made a major difference today is this approach, right? A variety of capabilities contribute to the business success. One is the intelligence of the action, the intelligence of the thinking process, how well a person is able to shift his focus and think differently, not get stuck in one type of thinking. That intelligence one needs to have. One is the basic intelligence, emotional intelligence also. Now that is a very important aspect. Intelligence is a very important part of it. The drive. Drive means the staying power. The willingness to take a risk and go ahead. One has to really make things happen so that there's a movement ahead. Right? Good health. Now when we say health means the person should have a constitution, mental fitness, physical fitness and also something wherein he is willing to take a chance. If you get bogged down by negative influences around you and you start believing in those negative influences, you start believing in limitations as limitations, not as figments of imagination, not as something that the mind is restricting, then the health is affected. Health is not only physical, it's also the way the mind is willing to look things fresh, look things younger. When I say younger means I'm not talking about age, younger as in a new idea coming up. Right? And then getting the right break at the right time. One has to keep persisting. Patience is one of the hallmarks of an integrative thinker. They try and at the right time the break happens. But when you do not even try, when you do not even know the direction, how will the break come? That's the point, right? If nothing else, integrative thinking improves the odds of the success without foreclosing other actions and disciplines that other business thinkers rely to solve problems. If I do a conventional or a traditional thinking, what happens is, if I do a traditional thinking, what happens? I am closing options which I have eliminated. Whereas when I do this, I have alternatives ready with me. A typical planning process requires integrative thinking wherein we say if A doesn't work, B has to take charge. It's not about only cost cutting. It's not about only profit generation. It's something more than that. See, the point to be noted is that in an integrative thinking, one sustains the business and one grows with an all-inclusive approach. It's not about profits today, profits tomorrow, narrow thinking. It's something more than that. A relationship building, for example, is possible through a lot of integrative thinking. Service sector uses this in a very big way, how integration has to happen, right? This emphasis on integrative thinking is not necessarily widely shared by business theorists and practitioners. It's a new approach. People are actually doing it without calling it integrative thinking. Many of you listening to me are maybe doing it without even knowing that it is integrative thinking, right? When into integrative thinking, a leader to be would address what should I do more than what should I think. The doing part of it is the emphasis in integrative thinking. A lot of people come out with theory. When things go wrong, we have a inquiry committee, people sit down and they say this should go right, this should go properly. Many things are put forward as plans. Action doesn't take place. Integrative thinking dare to do things different by acting, thinking different. It's not enough to say that I'm going to invest in tech stocks, I'm not going to invest in this, I'll do both. It's nice to show that you are rest apart from the crowd. But acting as a person apart from the crowd is important. The guts to do that is very important. Okay? The focus shift from just thinking and strategizing to strategizing with integration and acting on it. The action part of it is the emphasis. In traditional either-or approach, the emphasis is a lot on thinking, strategizing, planning, etc., which robs time and action to address a situation or the crisis. Sometimes the crisis expands when you do too much of thinking. What we say it as analysis paralysis. You know, the whole thing gets paralyzed. After that, you do not know what to do and the whole system crumbles. It happens in some companies, right? The dot-com bust was largely a failure of grandiose strategies. The dot-com companies were a glamour in the 90s, and then everybody invested there, and then one by one, each dot-com went bust. People thought big, big things, but they did not act upon it. And the collapse of the dot-com companies tilted the conversations away from thinking to doing. This bias towards action has been endorsed in three of the most influential business leadership books of recent years. Three books I'll be talking about right now. Some of you must have read them. These three books, which are supposed to be books written by very, very accomplished people who are generally thought to be thinkers, also emphasize on doing. Extracts from this book are indicating how these people were saying thinking differently or thinking in a very creative manner alone is not enough, but we need to also do it. Right? So these books which we are discussing are three of them. The name of the first book is Execution, The Discipline of Getting Things Done, written by the Honeywell CEO Larry Bozzetti and consultant Ram Charan. Good to Great, Why Some Companies Make the Leap and Others Don't, Professor turned Guru Jim Collins. And the third one is Jack, Straight from the Gut, the famous Jack Welch, former super CEO of GE. Right? Now in Execution, the book, Bozzetti and Charan argue, quote, execution is a great unaddressed issue in the business world today, unquote, and speak dismissively about executives who prefer to think about a strategy. So they themselves are validating it. The heart of execution lies in three processes, the people process, the strategy process, and the operation process. People process is about including people into thinking and also action. Strategy process is about long-term working to the unknown. And most importantly, the operation process, which is about action with constant refreshing about how you're doing it. These processes are where the things that matter about execution needed to be decided. In the book Good to Great, the famous book by Jim Collins, it seeks to explain how companies can go from merely being good to sustainably great. Good is good. Great is something different. There is a major difference between a good and a great. Great people, great companies become the benchmark. Good companies try to reach the benchmark, right? He introduces the now popular concept of level 5 leadership. Level 5 leaders, Collins argues, show a combination of determination and self-effacement. Determination, self-effacement. These are the people. The level 5 leader is a theme which the book runs. It says that leaders come in 5 different levels. At the topmost level is a level 5. The level 5 leader is a one who stops at nothing to make profits for the company. At the same time, he has a personal self-effacement. Personally, he is very humble. He relates with people very well. He knows the importance of action. He knows the importance of integrating various things. That word integration is not used here, but that's the type of a person that he is. They relentlessly give credit to others, get the right people in the organization, give them jobs suitable to their capabilities and set aggressive goals. Very soft and kind to people, compassionate, encouraging, at the same time demanding. Now these two are two opposable behaviors in people. Remember this. You come across people who are hard and determined to get results. Because they are hard and determined, they tend to become insensitive to others' behaviors and others' sensitivities. And they become macho, they become autocratic, and they achieve results. But after achieving results, they are having very poor human relations. On the other hand, we have people with good human relations, but they do not achieve much of results. A combination of these two is what is level 5 leadership. And the level 5 leadership emphasizes on action as well. That's the emphasis on this particular discussion, right? And in the book written by Jack Welch, he takes the reader on a journey through his career with primary focus on what he did to reach the top of GE and what he did once he got there. It was all about doing, right? Action has been the hallmark of Jack Welch in all that he has done, all that he did to make the GE the take a leadership status. We all know the story, right? All three books stress on the criticality of action over strategy and describe the mindset that produces effective action. Leaders should focus on execution and following through to the exclusion of almost everything else. The two terms I want to talk about, follow-up and follow-through. When I give a task to you, I keep following up so that you are on the track of completing the task. But very few people do what is called as follow-through. Follow-through means when I'm following up with you and I see the progress of the work going on, I must see to it that till the work is complete, the last stage of the execution of the work into completion, I have to see that that is also taken care of and the closure takes place. So that particular action, that process wherein I am ensuring till the last moment, till the completion, that the work is completed, that's follow through. Many people, many managers follow up, but they don't follow through. Follow through is going with a dogged determination to see to it that it's completed, it's closed, and it's there in front of us. Many times juniors come and say that this order is already come, it's clinched, we are following up with the order, and there are times when the order is come till the 11th hour completion, but it's not coming in our hands. And leaders are led to believe that it's all done, it's all ours. And we know number of examples where at the 11th hour things can go wrong. Leaders have to ensure that they not only follow, but the follow through also takes place. Like we say, the match is not over till the last ball is bowled. And that's follow through. Collins' ideal mindset combines fierce will with personal humility. The mindset that Welch advocates is consumed with aiming high and settling for nothing less than winning. No one can dispute the importance of doing. Thinking without doing is of little value or consequence. It's only intellectualizing, right? Still, it's difficult to come away from these three bestsellers with a compelling and practical prescription of what the leader ought to do. Bozzidi and Charan concede that strategy is an integral part of execution, but they fail to maintain a meaningful distinction between strategy and execution. As a result, what they term execution turns out to be a laundry list of everything a successful leader must do. And after the stance taken in the book, execution Collins' advice is refreshingly restrained and straightforward. What is being told right now is that while one book is emphasizing on action straight, the other book is implying it, not doing much. But the point to be noted is that all the three books are talking about the importance of action. Collins explains what a level 5 leader does, but he freely admits that he can't tell readers how to become a level 5 leader themselves. This is as far as the book is concerned. But as far as a trainer, I can tell you that there are training programs that have come eventually which actually tell people how to intermingle both these qualities, both these behaviors of personal humility on one side and the determination to achieve on the other side. Okay? At the time of writing the book, at that point of time, we did not have a solution perhaps. But now it's come because of a lot of deliberation, a lot of thinking, a lot of experimentation that have taken place. Right? For your own development, he writes, I would love to be able to provide you a list of steps for becoming a level 5, but we have no solid research data that would support a credible list. This is at the time of then, not now. Welch is particularly interesting. He was an integrative thinker himself. Once he had advocated that each of the GE's businesses be number one or number two in the market share in its industry. Jack Welch believed when he took over that you should come out of a business in which you're not either number one or number two. So any business which is not in number one or number two, he just sold it off. That was his directive given to people. This was based on his own integrative thinking. But his unit leaders gamed the system he created by defining their markets in such a way that they were guaranteed the number one or the number two position. He drove it down the line. Later, he took a diametrically opposite view to dictate that his businesses define their market share to be less than 10%. He figured his business leaders would be quick to spot market opportunities if they envisioned their markets as much larger than their share of it. We know about market share. In a market, in a pie, in the existing market, in the line of business into which you are, the higher the market share, the larger the area of the pie of your company, you're supposed to be a leader. But here he says, let us be number one or number two. But even if you're having a market share of 10% or less than 10% or maybe little more, we should be leaders in there. Leadership is more important than just having more business, in short. So while all the three books are focusing on leadership thinking, each of them is talking about the need for action, whether it produces the desired strategized results or not at the first shot. The key to realize this is that the either or approach spends a lot of time on strategizing and finally taking a well thought of decision. Well thought of is inverted commas because I think I well thought out, but at the time of taking action, some new variables come in. In spite of all the deliberations, in spite of all the well thought of strategies I adopt in the room, I may miss out on certain things because my way of thinking would have been well thought only in my way of thinking, right? In most cases, the time has run out or the decision has not served the total purpose. The and approach is dynamic, unlike the either or approach. We take actions instead of looking at the action. You know, when we are doing, when we are strategizing and thinking, we are looking for the action. It's like hiring someone, I want the person. Now, the person is an ideal I'm looking for, whereas I could take a person and it can make him the person I'm making and looking for. Similarly, if I'm looking for the action to happen, I'll be procrastinating. I'll be missing the bus. Each of them did offer a particular perspective, which is valuable, and business people do want to know what makes a great leader. Approaching each business problem with the question, what should I do, is to foreclose options before they are even explored. Instead of attempting to learn from actions of successful leaders, it would be critical to find out what made them take their action and what was the thinking behind it. When you read biographies of business leaders, you'll find that some of them have taken actions which we can't understand how they took such an action at that point of time. If you pause, go a little deeper, and seeing the way the whole process has flown, you'll come to know the way the thinking of theirs is happening. It is my suggestion to all of us that we need to understand how, when we read biographies, to get in touch with the thinking process of the individual. In the biographies, they normally give certain milestones of achievement, certain progress steps. But the reader, a good business school reader, has to go through the thinking process which the person must have had. If that thinking process is understood by you and me, we'll know how these people think integrated. Right? Understanding how successful managers, now here we talk about a topic called meet the cast. Understanding how successful managers who use integrated thinking and action is the key focus of this section. What have we done now? We have run through cases, we've spoken about three books, and we are understanding what is this integrative thinking all about and what are we supposed to do. We interviewed many successful CEOs from both US as well as from India, from big businesses to non-profit organizations, even artists and filmmakers. We get benefit of interviews with management guru Peter Drucker as well as Nobel laureate Michael Spence. The focus of these interviews was to identify in detail thinking behind the decisions each leader found particularly difficult to make. Okay. And in those critical incidents, it is believed that thinking patterns are most clearly revealed. It is through the critical incidents wherein I produce results or I'm in the stage of producing results, you come to know what I'm thinking. Imagine there is a critical situation going on and somebody is taking a decision. There are many people who will be opposing. But if you pause and get in touch with the thinking of the person, then you know that he is thinking differently. He may be an integrative thinker, right? The interviews were a challenge process for all. Interviews were also probing deeply for the first time into the thinking behind their most critically important decisions. Even though they were brilliant thinkers, they were not always reflective or articulate about their thought process. Initially, naturally, the author was not certain that he would recognize common patterns in their thinking. People were interviewed. Meeting the cast is all about interviewing the people who were successful. And they were asked to articulate what made you take the decision. Many of them took decisions, but they were not aware of the thoughts that were behind the decision. So once probing questions were asked, they were able to articulate the thought. They got in touch with, some of them got in touch with the thoughts, which led them to the action. Others couldn't. But from the responses that you got, they were able to correlate and say that practically all the persons who were into that actions, they had common thoughts. Those common thoughts were integrative in nature. Right? So, as the interviews progressed, it was clear that the interviewees' mental processes were equipped with a common operating system. This is what I was mentioning now. And they each used their operating system in their own unique context to produce their own unique outcome. But the thinking process seemed to come from a common program. Each one was unique. Lafley is unique. Isidore Sharp is unique. Everybody is unique. They have different lines of business. While integrative thinking is common to all of us, but we will be using it uniquely our way. I can think and do it uniquely my way as compared to another person who's in the same line of business, right? The pattern of reasoning, or perhaps better, the cognitive thinking patterns discipline that was discovered is what we are to term as integrative thinking. It has a series of identifiable steps, this process of integrative thinking, which we'll be learning in chapter 2, 3 and 4, etc. It has a consistent purpose. It can be understood quickly and it can be put into practice. This is a good news about this whole subject which we are learning right now, right? It is important to note that all successful business leaders are skillful at integrative thinking. It was a common theme, not a universal one. Universal means not everybody thought, but most of them thought. Integrative thinking is not a necessary condition for success. Success can come from other approaches also. Within those limitations, however, the integrative thinking approach is the most common theme connecting the leaders that were interviewed. Cultivating the opposable mind. How do I accept an opposing view in my mind? How do I cultivate it? Right? The important question is, the capacity for integrative thinking a gift reserved for a small minority, or can it be consciously and intentionally developed? As per Fitzgerald, the answer is yes, anybody can do it. If they can do it, I can also do it. There's a training called Neuro-Linguistic Programming, NLP. I'm a trainer in that. And here we say that anybody can do anything which others do. The brain is the same. The brain composition is the same. If he can do it, even I can do it. The question is, am I creating conditions to do what he's doing? This gives you a blueprint about how to create the conditions as well as the human capability, right? According to Fitzgerald, he said that few are born with the first rate intelligence, but as per Chamberlain, it's a skill and a discipline that even those of us who aren't geniuses can develop, right? Opposable mind is there to be used. The use of the method leads to certain peculiar habits of mind which deserve passing notice, since as a factor of education, its disciplinary value is one of importance. In the classrooms, when we are having discussions, there are students who come with opposing views. They come with multiple views. This actually makes the whole learning, the teaching, also very, very expansive. We start thinking in directions which we never thought of. We start discussing cases, we start discussing topics in directions which we not thought of. If everybody thought the same, then things would be different. I give this example to some students saying that, can you integrate the various subjects you're learning? Can you integrate, for example, human resources management with a subject like, say, financial accounting? Sounds ridiculous, right? Is there an integration? The answer is yes. How do you integrate these two things? Because when you integrate, you'll find that one is in the other and the other is in the first, right? Food for thought for most of you, right? When faithfully pursued for a period of years, it develops a habit of parallel or complex thought. Instead of a simple succession of thoughts in a linear order, The procedure is complex and the mind appears to become possessed of the powers of simultaneous vision from different viewpoints. Some of you must be practicing this. Some of you must be having it natural. For example, when I see an issue in front of me, I don't get a single solution thinking. It's something that's been there in me for a long period of time. So I start thinking in multiple angles. Suddenly multiple flashes come. And many people have confessed that whenever they see an issue, they have multiple solutions for that. They are already having a built-in integrative thinking. Now there are yet others, when they see a problem, they see only one solution, one path. Now those are the ones who need to cultivate this opposable mind. They need to think differently and they need to go through certain orientation, some training perhaps, right? Phenomena appear to become capable of being viewed analytically and sympathetically at the same time when you cultivate the opposable mind. Is integrative thinking unteachable or is it merely untaught? Is it a function of pure intelligence as Fitzgerald would have it, or of dedication and practice as Chamberlain suggests? Experience so far suggests but does not prove that people can be taught to use their opposable minds and they grow more skilled and confident with practice. But it is already clear that integrative thinking is untaught. What do you mean by untaught? Untaught means, you know, we have this process of learning, unlearning and relearning. When I say untaught means, whatever I've been taught for so many years, whatever I've been conditioned for so many years, which is creating success for me, no doubt, can I relook into the success factors? Untaught, unteaching. So unlearning and relearning, right? By untaught is meant we need to change our conventional thinking and be open to practice integrative thinking. The more it gets absorbed faster and more effectively. The whole world has not organized to produce integrative thinkers as it does brain surgeons or computer engineers. We go logically, linearly and cultivate our careers. Integrative thinkers also cultivate their careers, but not by linear logical, they keep options open, right? Integrative thinking is largely a tacit skill in the heads of people who have cultivated knowingly or otherwise their opposable minds. Those people do not appear to know how they are thinking or that it is different from the common run of thought. This happened to me number of times. People used to wonder, they used to ask me this, how come you're thinking differently? When I was in production, when I was in marketing, this thought comes to me people ask me this question. It runs in certain type of thinking process of certain people, naturally. In other people, one has to cultivate it, right? But we can observe, describe and analyze their thinking process, and from the conscious and systematic study, a method of teaching that process is starting to emerge. A framework is created and people are learning it. Let us end with an example that illustrates how people find out way in their lives using an AND approach. We find many people suffering from diabetes due to which they need to control intake of sugar. A very tiny example. A habit of eating sweets and craving for sweets make them feel miserable. On one hand, I must not eat sweets because I am diabetic. On the other hand, there is a craving for sweets. We have sugar-free sweets that are diabetic, we know it, diabetic friendly. Given a dire need, people actually resort to integrative thinking and action as can be seen here. Isn't it? I am running through the summary now to conclude the whole session. We studied how some leaders discovered a superior solution to a critical problem by ignoring options to select anyone from two opposing alternatives and deciding to adopt both. This allowed them to exploit advantages of both alternatives and eliminating their limitations. While some management gurus advocate that leaders succeed by doing right things, there are others who oppose that leaders think of winning strategy before they decide the right action. For this result, most of the leaders, most of the times, knowingly or otherwise, use their opposable minds for the process of integrative thinking. With this, my dear friends, I thank you for listening to the session and wish you all the best and push yourself into integrative thinking. It works. Thank you.